On today's issue of Homo Superior.
So let me ask y'all last question. Is there anything that can happen in the final issue to redeem the last four issues?
Yeah. I don't think they need redeeming, Caitlin.
Wow.
This pointed ass interview style method.
So what did this mean? Because I didn't.
Your Honor, objection. Leading the witness.
Well, Brent is gay, and Caitlin's gay, and Clark is gay, and Ryan's gay, and Adam's gay. It's Homo Superior.
Welcome to Homo Superior, the only podcast located in the Milky Way ghetto. Issue 327, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Brent Wingate. This week, in X-Men 97, Storm confronts her greatest fear, tight spaces, and Professor Xavier confronts his greatest fear, long-term commitments. Also, Mutant Madness is done, and we have a winner, and you have to kiss him. Who will it be? We'll tell you. Or you can go look online. We have multiple channels to find things out from. Also, we have some messy regular issues and even messier plugs.
Ew.
It's going to be a sloppy one. No housekeeping this week, so Adam, do you want to raw dog us right into MCU Next TV?
Jesus Christ, I sure don't. MCU Next TV is our weekly segment focused on the latest and greatest of the MCU Disney Plus TV shows. Today, we are talking the sixth episode of X-Men 97, Life, Death, Part 2. Storm works to save Forge's life while learning to believe in herself and fighting the adversary. Meanwhile, Xavier juggles intergalactic political affairs and assassins after agreeing to marry Shi'ar Magistrix Lelandra.
So before we get into this, did you guys see last week's episode? It was pretty crazy, right?
Yeah. Wait, what happened?
In this house, we do not skip the intro. We don't see Magneto or Gambit. We do get Nightcrawler, even though he's not in the episode at all, which is a really funny.
I was happy with
yes.
that intro.
Yeah,
it's a good. It was great. They leaned into his sword wielding side of him too, yeah. which is very specific to the comic. So I like that they're bringing
yeah.
that side out.
Agreed.
Of him.
Because he didn't really use the sword in the 92.
In church? No, not a lot.
Ken's the weird evil monks.
They're like, yeah. You're like a blue demon religious swashbuckling pirate.
Who loves sex. New clips. We see Nimrod and Master Mold. We got a flashback to One Man's Worth where Nimrod is fighting Bishop Wolverine and Storm.
Yeah.
We get to see the X-Men fighting the Shi'ar Guard. We get a little bit more Dark Phoenix. And we also get Xavier meeting with Lelandra in her travel battle armor.
And that felt very anime, that one little clip of them being like, there's like hearts everywhere and like cute kitties. It was very fun.
Yeah, no, I was really happy with that sequence. Those are some really great adds to the intro. Let's go through Charles's story first, and then we'll talk on Storm. So first up, we've got the Shi'ar versus Kree. They're hunting for the Supreme Intelligence. What did you think about not only Ronan being in this, but also the fucking Huntress herself, Deathbird?
I mean, we all stand. We're going to see so many like cosplayers doing her now. It's yep. going to be drag queens galore. You know what? She's worth it. She deserves it. It's great.
Easy breezy. Beautiful break through that window. She's phenomenal. She's always been a queer icon, but having her like being in this now, it's going to escalate her to the higher level. I'm 1,000%. So excited. Her entrance is phenomenal yep. into that room.
Well, so she barely showed up as a cameo in Beyond Good and Evil in the 92 series.
Flashback.
With an unnamed voice actor, actually. My favorite line from her during this entire sequence, surrender? No, just perish. It's like, Jesus Christ, talk about Japanese RPG bullshit. We also see the Shi'ar Guard. There's, you know, all the ones you love, Gladiator. I did realize that Warstar was in this. I know I was telling you all before, like, having not rewatched it. Benny and Cecil, my favorite. Those two
Which
fuckers.
Are yes, short for Bee's Knees and Cecily's.
It's wild that two people with very different names become the term Warstar. It's so weird.
I can't wait for their 1920s comedy special.
It's like two wrestlers entered the ring. It's Warstar.
Who's on whose shoulder first? Yeah.
Yeah, and this is that. He's like barely in it, or they're barely in it. It's like that green fucker, and then there's the little one like crawling around in the back.
And the little one.
There was also Flashfire, Starbolt, Titan, Manta, Smasher, Earthquake even shows up, and motherfucking Vulcan.
Okay, so let's
speak on that.
Let's talk about Vulcan. Yeah. So obviously he is the third Summers brother, so he's got huge implications that he's there. What is his backstory? So we're going completely different than the comics. I want to know everything. I feel like we're going to get a little romance with a certain lady that likes to wear feathers all over her body. But I want... No, not quite.
Okay.
But no, but I feel like he's going to have a bigger role at some point, but they're just teasing him now. What do you guys think?
I think they're going to do Deadly Genesis. But like a truncated version of it.
I would agree.
So Deadly Genesis, for those who don't know, was a storyline in the mid-2000s that introduced another generation of X-Men before the all-new, all-different. They mostly died, kind of came back. Vulcan was part of it, went crazy, became like the head of the Shi'ar Empire in a storyline in the late 2000s. It's really convoluted, but it's really kind of good, too.
Yeah. I think Vulcan showing up is just a testament to Corsair star jamming his cock in every porthole he can find.
His wife?
Honestly, yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, and I mean, again, this show is eating every week and leaving no crumbs, and I think that means, unlike 92, where they would just toss in shitty character, you know, shitty character cameos for no reason because they just wanted visual effect. I would have to imagine that Bo DeMeo and any of the other creative team had very specific reasons and plans for putting those characters in that. Poor one out, though, because Oracle, Husar, and apparently Hobgoblin.
From Spider-Man?
No, there is a... I know, but it's wild to me that they were like, there's also a Hobgoblin in space.
Husar is low-key the best, though, because she's got the best hair.
I like Manta.
I like Manta, too.
Manta's always a good visual effect.
I don't know who the fuck any of these people are.
Well, they don't have big roles. They usually don't.
Manta was the...
Like when your friend is like, I'm coming to your party. Can I bring like a friend or two? And you're like, sure. And then it's just the weirdest group. What do you mean? There's two of them and they go by one name.
That is gay parties.
Yeah.
This Ronin felt like the MCU Ronin, too.
I was interested. Like, I was almost surprised that they had lifted. I mean, it's great, again, to see the interconnectivity of these kind of properties. But I was like, oh, wow, they're like really moving fast on that.
Well, they did that because in the comics, there was a whole like 19-part storyline with the Avengers books called Operation Galactic Storm. So it was the Shi'ar-Kree War.
Okay.
So it was like Avengers, Captain America, Iron Man, all the like other cosmic and like superhero-y books had like, it was actually a really good storyline.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you what also showed up in the MCU movies. Someone putting a heel through Ronan's cheek.
Man, that was aggressive.
That was, yeah.
But there's a big news coming because Xavier's got some sick-ass battle armor from the comics, and Lilandra wants to know all the Shi'ar to know that she is fucking this man and they are getting married.
So they can cure whatever fake disease he had, but they can't seem to figure out how to make him walk without a machine sort of thing.
They also can't send a signal back to Earth to be like, hey, I'm cool. Don't worry about me. Everything's all right.
No, but I think he specifically did that to make them be on their own.
But well, he gave it to Magneto, right? He's like, I did abscond this. I'm leaving this throne.
Give it to God. That's what they mean. Give it to Magneto.
He was shitting on that exoskeleton pretty quickly, though. That was kind of a dick move. Like, yeah. I don't know. I think it's pretty nice of them to, you know, give him extra ways to move around.
Well, I wonder if it's the equivalent of like, I know my boyfriend, I think he's kind of come around to it. But when we first started dating, he's colorblind. And I like, of course, like the typical, like, how can I change someone's life as their partner was like, oh, maybe a good gift would be those colorblind glasses that allow you to kind of see something. And, like, I don't know if I told him about it first or it just came up, but he was like, I'd fucking murder anyone that ever bought me those glasses because, like, why would you show me something that I may not, like, I can't have all the time or it's like this and that. There's a certain, I don't think there, yeah.
Surely there's also stuff like, well, why do you need to fix me? I'm not,
I'm not broken. It's not a disability.
But I don't know. It's just like you agreed to wear them.
I mean, they also could have, it could have been a lot easier than a gigantic battle armor that includes a helmet on the top.
If I can offer a quick explanation, I think the reason he did that is because she maybe said, you have to do this to look like my consort.
Right.
Yeah, if you show up in a wheelchair, if you look weaker than you already are, and they already think you're weak because you're human, we're going to get to an epic line here in a second, but yeah.
If you look like a garbage Terran from fuck shit.
Yeah.
Her words, not mine.
We call it Earth. Yeah.
So Lilandra and Xavier meet up in the garden. Xavier wants to fuck. He wants to get to that sandy beach on Earth. He's pushing for Lilandra to come to Earth. What did you think of their ongoing dialogue? Did you feel like the relationship from 92 carried through to this? Did they accelerate it too much? What are your thoughts?
I never thought that they've had that much like chemistry with one another. I like the idea of Charles like being associated with them and like having that relationship only for like the sort of the galactic political element of it, but like I don't like ship them.
It's even in the comics, it doesn't really feel like they're like it doesn't feel like
star-crossed lovers. I'm like, no,
not quite. Yeah,
just literally, not figuratively.
And especially when someone tells you how, like, when they tell you and not show you, and sometimes it feels like that with their relationship.
1000%.
I mean, I guess he's been gone for at least
a year.
Yeah, quite some time. So you would the assumption is that boosted their. Relationship.
Some say a year.
A year.
I talked to some of their friends, though, and they're like, it's only been like 9 months. Yeah. But like they, you know, they're round up.
Moving pretty fast.
A great line that I thought certainly speaks to, I think, some of the things that I'm even feeling in my personal life. Families often mimic black holes, visit, and risk being sucked into its vacuum of dramas.
As a queer podcast, I think that hits home sometimes.
For yeah, for real.
She just looked up and then made a metaphor.
Yep.
It's not like there's a common expression. Families are like black holes.
Yep. And then we also get our first taste of essentially what is so much of this episode, anti-colonialism. You know, once we crush the Kree, an educator like you can teach them our ways.
Uncomfortable.
Just so much like, yeah. And it's, I do like that it's almost like scary how soft-handed it is, and she is. Like, she never comes across as threatening or thinking that her might is right kind of way. I just thought it's like a good character beat. And then we get them arriving on the scene. These two are horned up. Your man speaks as if I'm your pet. Well, it's not an entirely unpleasant thought.
Well, there was that moment where she pressed the little remote button and mm-hmm. the anal stimulator in his probe just like went off, and he's like, "Oh,
what do you think?
Yes,
what
it's
do
not
you,
that, not that you, bad of a thing, is it, to be a pet?
What do you think is going to help him like walk? It's that little thing, the little butt plug.
Oh yeah, we've seen the.
We've never advanced
before,
our technology beyond you have to sit on this anal plug in order to walk.
That's the peak. Why do you think they wear those helmets?
That's how the walking mechanism works. It enters his butt and then just goes around.
Sheer technology is very sexual.
Yes. She literally says, "You may bark later." I'd like really kind of fun dialogue between everybody. Araki's there, everyone's favorite advisor of the Shi'ar. And once again, the Kuntress enters the chat. What did we think about Deathbird's experience here?
Wow, so messy. She is so messy.
She's a real housewife. I mean, it's not Death Bird, it's Death Drop, really. So
I get really tired of the, we're an alien species and we have a word for a particular political tradition where you must face a trial. Like,
my favorite
come on,
is
can you guys just like vote or something?
My favorite is they were literally like, "What do you think we should call this trial by choice of, you know, challenge?" And they're like, "Dasha." you know, yeah, she's throwing out lines. Your consort was born Terran trash. Lalander's like, "Bitch, so heed my throne."
Is Terran an offensive term to us now?
In space, it is.
It is. Yeah. Okay.
I've been. Well,
it's our word.
Are we reclaiming it, or like, what are we doing with it? Like, are we? What are we doing with the word Terran?
We're taking it back.
Okay. Great. I'm so glad to.
Well, what should it be otherwise? Earthakin.
I mean, yeah. I guess like Terran Scott. Like, why is it so?
That's
inherently
what
Yondu negative?
Called Earthlings. Terrans.
Yeah. Terrans. Terex.
But not with such visceral.
Earthling? Earthling?
Earthers.
Yeah. Earther.
Earthers, I think, feels like a word.
Earth as kit.
Yeah.
Because, like, I would assume there are other planets where. No, that doesn't make sense. I was like, there were Terrans exist. And I was like, no, Terra is based on.
It means
Earth.
Dirt.
Yeah.
Where they worship kangaroos and eat spaghetti.
She's just so messy and. I love her justification of being like, Lalandra is crazy. Let me tell you how crazy she is. And you're like, but her explaining it makes her seem even crazier.
Yeah.
But people start to believe it. It's very Housewives 101.
She does really have a great retort after, like, you know, the heed my throne. She says, well, the throne is bound to more than whims of your heart, cunt. And everyone went,
oh, shit. Yeah.
I love that they said cunt on Disney Plus.
They had to bleep it
also
out.
The crowd work in this scene is like so bitch. Good. They're always like, oh, oh.
Wait, is that where we got like the little like Family Guy character? Or
no, that,
that
was during the announcement of the marriage.
Do we know,
yeah.
Do we know her name?
There was a Lois Joe from Family Guy mixed with Spiral that became everyone's new favorite, mainly just ours.
Mainly but just us.
But eating it.
X-fans love a gremlin.
And, you know, the line that is really making the rounds everywhere and was on the front page of the New York Post today was, Xavier would see his Milky Way ghetto become our new throne world. It kind of
that's their equivalent of the New York Post.
Well, if you were to, because obviously I assume there's some sort of mental translation. What do you think the word for ghetto is in Chandalarian, Shiarian,
Shiar? Yeah.
Garakak is mine.
I was thinking like, what if you were like, if you heard it unsubtitled?
Yeah.
The subtitle would read, "Trash place not worth conquering."
Yeah. Anything coming out of her mouth, it's never going to be a positive context whatsoever.
I want to see her and Emma Frost just go at it.
Yeah.
Like cunting off.
I mean, we're all still asking for the Real Housewives of Krakoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, so M. Dasha is the non-Shiar test. Xavier's like, bitch, I read that fucking book yesterday. Go fuck yourself. And the test is that he must renounce Earth and erase all memory of his life there, with his lover being the one to do it. Could you move to an alien planet and completely forget about all of us?
How good is the alien planet?
Yeah.
Instantly.
Well, even if it's bad, I'll do it.
Yeah. I love this challenge. I think this is a really great way of leveraging why the X-Men are so necessary and why they're essentially a queer story. The whole discussion about, hey, it's not just erasing your past, it's also erasing what that thing meant to you,
your identity.
Yeah,
really. Yeah.
So you have to change to conform, and this surely plays into the theme. I mean, they basically bring it up, the stuff about the exoskeleton and the game of politics and how much the Shiar is this conquering empire. I think that that's a great challenge. Again, I do not know how you have a political system that has that as a challenge, but I liked it.
To answer your question, not if they're bird people. Otherwise, maybe. Yeah.
What if they're like the Skrull or the Kree or like the Badoon?
Oh, Skrull would be fun.
What about Katati?
Yeah.
Burn.
Like a plant people. He loves plants.
Yeah. You love plants.
All right. So then, yeah, we get into Gladiator and Xavier talking
Sorry.
I did do your best Elizabeth impression.
Continue. Sorry.
We hear about Shara and Kiethri. They're the core of their principles, bringing cultures together for peace and harmony. Yeah, we've heard that before. Mm-hmm. Also, the Shiar look at art as a sign of insanity and deviance.
Great.
I mean, that's not semi-incorrect for even, like, the U.S., not the U.S. world.
Have you met some artists? Come on.
Have you been to the Louvre? Nuts.
Brent, I'm assuming you appreciated the Roger Kipling reference.
Rudyard
Kipling.
He said Roger in the cartoon.
No, he didn't.
He said Rudyard.
And I didn't listen. Rudyard, yeah. Because I looked it up and I said,
I did love Gladiator's like, I don't know who the fuck that is.
Do you love Kipling, Miss Scarlet? Sure, I'll eat anything.
Then there was where Lalandra pressed the button again, and Xavier goes,
Ricky, tick it up. And when that went off, he goes, you know what I was just thinking about for no apparent reason? My friend Magnus.
Yeah.
My
good friend Magnus.
Yeah. I wish to remember him.
Yeah.
You remind me of him in so many ways.
The
purple, the muscles.
The queer storyline keeps going with that, with him. Kind of, that is the one thing he can't really give up, is the memory of him and obviously the X-Men that found family or whatever.
But built,
but specifically Magnus. I mean, Are we ever going to get to that point where we're going to talk about that more?
Well, because ties in through, you know, idealism being a sign of insanity and him, Xavier, saying, well, you know, my friend thought that. I did love the line of, what is united if one half must be erased for the sake of the whole? Again, a little bit heavy-handed on the takeaways in this episode, but a lot of neckbeards need him, so kudos. Yeah.
Well, I think the thing I also appreciate is the idea from the immigrant experience that we often want people, there's a lot of people in America who want full assimilation, which just is like, all right, you're taking all of the parts of it and anything that is in any way disagrees with me or I don't like it, we're just going to grind that down until it's perfectly smooth so it fits into society. And if you do that, you lose what makes people interesting and what makes cultural exchange worthwhile in the first place.
I mean, it's an interesting conversation because there are a lot of people who, when they come to the United States, they're so otherized that that's the only way that they feel that they can completely fit in.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's my experience. Certainly, it's the folks who came before me, like my aunt and uncle, when they came to the United States in like the 1960s and 70s, like, they're like, we have to do this. We have to completely fucking assimilate.
I'm thinking of the Simpsons episode with Apu when he's like, why would I want this when I could look at the cover of Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman
staring at me with her cold, dead eyes? Mother, father, I've forsaken you. I'm not doing the accent.
So we get to M. Dasha. Araki's running the show. Xavier hesitates. Once again, this Huntress shows up and she's like, bitch.
Did you find my friends on them? Like, what? Why is she always?
I was actually a little surprised. I didn't think that the test was going to hinge on him. Actually, he's like, yeah, I'll renounce all of Earth. And then they asked specifically about the X-Men. He's like, I don't know if I can do that. I actually thought that the test was going to end with, well, he was willing to submit to it, so we're not going to make him do it. But they're a bunch of assholes. Yeah, I mean, they're dicks.
Yeah, no, they were like, you're going to do it then.
Yeah, great.
No,
they are bird Nazis of, like, that galaxy. They're
a bunch of bird Nazis. They also won't let him answer. He was like, well, let me just think for a second. They're like, no, you said no. No, no.
There is that one super bitch that goes, you know, after Deathbird comes in, throwing out allyship to Earth again, and we get another infamous line from Xavier of, my God, you are dramatic.
So good.
But I, you know, there's obviously tons of allusion of also like interracial dating or just, you know, interspecies in this case, but, you know, have our blood mixed with his inferior fleek fluids. And then just some bitch with like the oldest lady voice, even though she looks like she's 20, is just like, that's right. He's a lower class cast of Terran, a mutant.
Bird Nazi. Avian Braun over here.
Fuck you, Avian Braun.
We then get sedition because Deathbird obviously just wanted the throne to begin with. We see Gladiator and Deathbird fighting, Gladiator versus lackeys.
This is when she's so stupid because she's like, see, he won't do it. So Lalandra's crazy. I'm not storming in screaming at everyone. Lalandra is crazy for doing
she
this.
Is.
But how crazy is it? I mean,
love. Right? Am I right?
But every empire, every political system, there are people at the top who bang side pieces.
Yeah.
And we don't strip them of their power.
Yeah. Let's name a few right
now.
That's
a proud,
famous
that's a proud
ones.
Tradition.
Yeah.
All of Greece.
All of us with Kaylin to get on this podcast.
Xavier realizes he does have mental abilities and chooses to use them. What did you love?
I had forgot because I could walk that I have mental ability.
What did you think about class being in session?
This was annoying and perfect at the same time. Yeah. So he is an annoying teacher. When he started teaching, I think everyone a little bit rolled their eyes. Deathbird the most.
Mm-hmm.
But it's...
I thought you were talking to us as viewers because I was fuck yes.
Yeah.
I was
Wait,
laughing.
Did a fake chair not show up and you were in a classroom as well when you were watching this? Because I was. But I think this is... who he is. There's a new voice actor that plays him as well.
Ross Marquand.
Yes, and he does a really great job.
I didn't love it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I just love the old...
You love the original.
He was a little more...
Jubilee is always so happy.
The former one was a little bit more Wario. Yeah. Waluigi, Storm. Yeah, a little bit that, but I think this characterization of Xavier is really good.
Oh yeah, like, agree.
They
the
did such
excellent.
A good job of it.
I mean, we as a culture have had such antagonism toward authority figures and questioning, and even if we weren't questioning all of our institutions and stuff, there's still something about when you're creating art that like. All right, this is the really nice teacher. Let's try and do something different. And it gets a little bit tiring, I think. Charles Xavier is a jerk, yeah. But it is nice to return to form a little bit and actually have him be a teacher.
Yeah.
And trying to help people and progress society itself.
It's, in theory, selfless, but it's also selfish the way he does it, of just like white savior yes. nonsense.
Oh, 100.
His whole thing is, guys, we have to accept all cultures. So I can bang this woman.
But you also, know, you go to the astral plane.
Yeah.
You can go anywhere and create any sort of like imagery. And he said, "Why? What about a small public schoolroom?" Right. You know what I mean? Like, what? Like, he could have made them spaced out. He could have given them the
good
chairs.
He just remembered he had mind powers. Could you give him a break?
I do, again, obviously a very hard-hitting punch to obviously the Shi'ar Imperium, but also to colonialism in our world today. You know, it's a harvest of stolen worlds. Empires could be rivaling your own. You strike at the knees, and then you claim that you can help them walk, but only if they assimilate or submit. It's a snake oil racket. I mean, did you expect to see this level of content in episode 6 of the first season of a show that really reaches everybody in every age right now?
I think for an episode that started with beating up the Kree, I did not. Because I thought, oh, it's the Kree. That's kind of fun that they're here, but obviously they're an easy punching bag. For them to turn it introspectively, I think is great.
And for us not to really know that the Shi'ar was going to be in this episode until the previews came out and everyone and their mother posted about the previews.
My God,
for
I
the love
that.
Of God, thank you for all of those. Us included.
Who did
us
it?
Included.
Who did it? Name
them. Name them.
Marvel.com. But for them, for me not to even realize that they were going to be in this series and then for them to hit this hard with it,
yeah,
you didn't have to go that hard.
The Shi'ar is didn't a have to go that empire, hard. By the way. Shit empire.
I know they cut people at the knees.
They
as
grow
we know.
People and then they fly planes into their legs and then they can't walk.
Well, like if you like,
so they give them butt plug seating to leg movers.
Then what
so
do many, they feed them? A snake oil.
So many of the great empires were not. They could. I mean, I'm probably not enough of it. I don't know enough history.
Well, why don't you go into it?
It's that it's a very, very bad idea to...
Hey, Brent, where did you get that green suit and the blue and green tie and the bald head?
To completely rob people of their cultures. It's a very dangerous thing to do if you're trying to run an empire. What often happens is that you conquer some people, you make some set of rules that show that you're in charge and responsible. But if you try and strip everything away from people, they
that's turn what happened in
you.
Andor.
It's what happened in Andor.
It's what happened in Andor with
and
the Empire.
That's it. Always comes back to Andor.
Yeah.
It
really does. It really does.
Yeah, just kind of wrapping this up in the sense of, you know, we get pushback on Might is Right. Iraqi's like, hey, you fuckers do this too. I've seen your textbooks. You know, the whole conversation around to be more, you must be less. I did love the flip of the make-believe. So at the beginning of the episode, Xavier's talking about, you know, Lalandra's basically like, you and your fucking little weirdos flying around and saving the day is cute, but like, you should join us. And he's like, we've been doing make-believe this whole time. And she's like, you fucking bitch. The Shi'ar has been doing make-believe.
She's like, squaw! And then flies away and eats some like bird seed. And then like, you were ridiculous. Anyway, my sister's a bitch.
She eats the bird seed and then she like mother like into his mouth.
Yeah,
it's like
baby birds it.
Baby birds it. Yeah.
He does then, you know, we'll come back to it because I also want to talk about,
okay,
yeah, because I want to talk about Storm's story and then have them converge.
I like that you're cutting in between the two stories differently than they did in the show. Just
just no, to keep the path going.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about Storm. She, meanwhile, which is so funny that this is called Lifeblood Part 2 and she's maybe 10 life death and she's in part like 10% of the episode. It really doesn't focus on her.
She was like in half. That's split pretty evenly.
I didn't count it. And it felt different to me. To me, it felt maybe because it was so good.
If
it felt like
if it's not 100%, it's 0%.
I'm also claustrophobic, so I like fast forward through her scene. Yeah. So like it was faster.
I'm owl phobic, so I do the same.
Storm is attempting to heal Forge from the end of part one. The adversary is taunting in the background. The adversary also played by Allison Seeley Smith.
Yes.
What a great performance. Such a creepy, creepy villain.
Another bird person, too. Yeah,
this is a very bird-centric episode.
I will say, that's totally right. The adversary is so much more menacing in this cartoon than they ever were in the comics.
It looks more ghoulish or demonish in the comics, too. Like, I kind of like this take on it. Yeah.
It's very creepy. And the animation style makes
it... The rotating head constantly back and forth.
Unsettling.
Very cool.
Spooky eyes.
Storm says all lives deserve saving, even his. Is that true? Do all lives deserve saving?
All lives matter? Is that what you're trying to say?
Was Storm making that reference?
Wow.
Storm.
I think she's coming from a place of that she's a good person.
Yeah. I think that's a really good ethos. I think that if you can save someone's life,
you should.
That's very, if you have the opportunity to step in. Yes, that's a very fair.
It's not
way
like she's doing
it.
Something else. That owl is haunting the both of them.
She can't get out. She's smashing the windows.
Like if the owl just let her go, maybe she would have abandoned
Forge. There's another take that
to
Bo,
his tetanus.
So there's a whole other take that Bo did where it was from the adversary's point of view, and it was Storm haunting just being like, yeah, I used to do thunder. It's not good. They cut it, but...
I barely understood what you just said.
It's the opposite. Yeah,
I loved it when the adversary was like, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop?
Yes, Ryan's version was the minusary.
We do get some more digging into why Storm has done some of the things she's been doing since episode 2. The conversation around you're not an X-Men anymore. Where did that get you? Kissing the hand that beat you. A lot of claustrophobic death hallucinations.
Very Kill Bill Part 2.
Yeah, I like it. I love all the connection of God. The adversary picked up on one fucking word of her going like, Gene, I guess I could be a human. That's not how Aurora sounds, but that's what I think. Yeah.
That's how Jolene sounds.
Jolene. And then Dr.
Aurora Monroe.
the claustrophobia was done better in this version than obviously... the original X-Men series.
When she goes and walks into a closet.
No, first of all, how dare you? The fact that they use the same screen print every time of rocks falling in front of her, standing in front of a wall going, that's claustrophobia.
That is scary. That is scary. Okay, yeah, more than coffins, I guess. You're right, yeah.
Dr. Forge attacks, everyone's favorite master of magic. He's still injured. She wants to ride together to go find, what looks like
a
mystery cactus.
Does Forge have magic?
It's from his mom.
It's just the book?
His mom used to doubt. Viz taught his mom about it at some point. I enjoyed the visual of, once again, connecting the MCU of it sort of looked like
totally
the Doctor Strange.
Totally looked very similar to
the
glyphs.
Tying it all together.
Dr. Forge on the phone. So then Storm and Forge head to the mines. What did you think of this experience before, leading up to the fact that she's got to go down a deep, dark mine that she's claustrophobic for?
She's claustrophobic for it. Let me just say that. I think it's the perfect way that she can defeat her demons in a lot of different ways. One callback is like when they're going through and it's like the Civil War was actually involved too. So I think that's going to be some callback that Wolverine's going to be involved in at some point. Remember when they're walking
through?
Yeah,
the Plains War. These are both such good parallel stories for each other. One that tells a intergalactic, Imperium and all the negative effects of that, and then thankfully continues to hopefully relate and reinforce that, like, America's kind of fucked, y'all. Like, wake up and read a book, but don't, because you can't. Yeah, that's why you're
because it's been banned.
That's why you
read by Moms for Liberty.
I think, Forge's position is very interesting in that circumstance because he's someone who enabled the power to fuck over his, fellow brethren. But I wish that they, I hope they explore that more. Like for him as a personal level, it felt mostly like a, like some guilt and trying to fix Storm. But I don't know. I'd be kind of, I'm curious to see that individual story for him.
Oh, Brent, this is the only development Forge is going to get the rest of the show.
We'll never see him again.
Great. There's a whole backstory about his, how he got the bandana. But nothing else about his character.
Well, and I mean, to be fair, if Bastion does end up showing up as some of these Easter eggs being dropped are, I hope that he would be pretty heavily involved in that conversation and discussion.
Yeah.
We get a good line. The worst weapon used wasn't blankets or bullets, but a white lie. And then Storm goes deep. She finds the plant she needs to make the poison cure. Adversary returns. Let's talk about Storm's transformation. What went through your minds?
What the fuck happened? Okay, so how did she cure herself? Yeah, so, I mean, inner saboteurs, inner adversaries, yeah, like all of that stuff. But so she was lying to herself, is what you're telling
she
me?
She defeated the demon within.
Okay, I get that.
That's therapy.
So in theory, the gun did basically make her lose her powers for a temporary time, right? But yes. Then she put... I'm just talking it out a lot, but yeah. Like, and then in theory, she kept it up because of her own sort of stuff that she had going on.
Yes.
So like why the machine didn't work. Yeah.
I get it. It's just, I hate these types. Well, sometimes it frustrates me because
it's tough because understanding Storm having any kind of self-hatred or any kind of mental block. It's been in one line of an episode in this new series. And so it seems not super grounded to be like, you're the thing that's holding you back. Because none of us have ever thought of Storm in the show as being someone who held herself back.
Yeah, which is a new development, which isn't bad, but it's still, yeah.
I wouldn't totally agree with that. I found there was a good
flip.
Oh,
well, that's interesting. So Adam is muted now. And let's see him try to talk his way out of this one.
No, I just...
When did you think...
I think it... Thank you. No, I thought it was really interesting because particularly... And again, they're obviously rushing... Not rushing it, but they're providing a lot more extra perspective and context. But just the simple line of, like, you fear living. And then the whole idea that she's spent her entire life, every time she uses her powers... Kaylin, you really want to say something?
No, finish your thought.
I just love the way that they really... acutely picked up on it, but I think it's true of a lot of people, and it's true of a lot of people that throw themselves into life-threatening situations because they don't necessarily, and that's the, you know, Godzilla Minus One had that kind of plotline. People that are looking to make up for things or find the validation that they're looking for are more than willing to throw themselves into the fire because if it doesn't work out, then great, at least you get some peace, kind of thing.
I kind of wish that she'd overcome her internal demon and the external demon, the adversary, but she didn't get her powers back immediately.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking.
Yeah, and like her just rejoining the X-Men but being depowered like she was in the comics, so much so that she ended up taking over, leading the X-Men, defeating Cyclops in battle, like in issue number 201 of Uncanny X-Men. I would have liked to have seen that maybe through the end of the season and then... You know, maybe at the end of this season, beginning of season two, she gets her powers back.
I can kind of see that, too. And yeah, I was expecting her to rejoin without her powers. Like you said, it's also it sped up the timeline for her story as a whole, too, because I feel like it was a couple different phases we could have seen before.
Well, and I think probably
didn't dislike it. But
well, yeah, and I think some of the reason that this was probably accelerated is that the way that I think some of the writing in particular where she's, you know, realizing that she's holding herself back, you know, she believed it, deny her power, play dead or humanity will thunder down. If all of this is an allegory for people of color, gay
allegory,
allegory, is, you know, really living your truth, being your authentic self, not shutting yourself off because of what the world is telling you is considered normal. While I think narratively it would make sense to see the extension, the message would be completely undercut and lost of like, well, no, she didn't transform. Like she isn't living her best truth, but she's still an effective member. Like, that's the only thing reason why I think they would likely have sped it up, or it's just that they have 10 episodes and want to get her back into gear.
I did see people at the start of this reboot point out that Storm's hair transformation into the Mohawk was a significant moment for her because it reflected choices that she had made within the comic. And I thought, oh, that's very interesting. And it's sad that we don't get to see that. I'm glad, though, that at least to get to this one of the most iconic looks for her includes something of a transformation for her, that she is embracing the inner demons that she have. And I think that is imposed on the costume, because the costume, like having the black outlook, is not, that's not like explained as like, oh yeah, it's because Storm has inner demons she's working through.
It's
I like that there's some in-story explanation for that outfit.
Does her appearance change make sense? I'm happy for it. I love this outfit, but does it make sense?
Well, it's someone actually on Instagram pointed out, we were talking about it, was the, like, I forget that she also had basically costume transformation powers even in the first episode of 92 when they're at the mall. So I think she just magically can turn her outfit into
one. Yeah, but now her, she has hair
but
power.
Her hair.
Guys, but I mean, in the MCU,
the hair.
Lightning, when it strikes you, it causes you to change your outfit. That's how Thor is able to change.
That's true.
That's how Storm is able to change. Anyone who can use lightning,
hair.
Instant clothes change.
And
yeah.
Hair.
Hair.
Of the three outfits, what do we like? Okay, so we have the original one from the original animated series. Mm-hmm. We have her sort of weirdly updated with the mohawk look. And then
Gambit's
we have
hair.
Yeah, right.
The old Gambit hair. Mm-hmm. And then we have this new look, which is the John Byrne sort of
Dave Cockrum outfit. Yeah.
Yeah. From All New,
Love
All Different.
Love this one. Love this one.
It fits. It's more progressive, even though it was an older outfit, if that makes sense. Like, it feels more with the time.
I love this costume so much. Dave Cockrum, who's the first artist that Chris Claremont worked with when he did All New, All Different, is a good artist, but he's a phenomenal costume designer. He designed Nightcrawler. He designed the Phoenix outfit and Storm. And so these are just looks that like have stood the test of time. They don't look dated. Yeah. They look great.
But did any of you guys, when she made that transformation, think about, like, it takes a long time to fly to space, and then, like, Forge is just lying in a cave, spitting up blood.
She basically became Super Saiyan. Like, she, like, started going, like, 900 miles an hour and flying,
just
like,
fucking
breaking
with horses.
The sound barrier.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Did I cheer? Yes. Did I go back and rewatch it? Yes. Was I still confused? Also, yes.
Like, triple threat
just,
here.
It's just, it was a wild transformation, but I'm glad she's back. And I'm glad she's like, I have all this power. I'm ready to like branch out. I'm really, I know who I am now. Do you want to go on vacation now?
Everybody just wants to fucking go on vacation. And unfortunately,
what happened? Did I miss something?
Well, if you watched last week's episode, I don't know if you've caught up yet,
Brent,
but if you haven't.
Brent
make
said
sure
don't watch. It's not important.
I'm watching it right now.
Make sure to go back to it. So obviously Storm and Xavier both find out in very different ways about the Genosian attack. Storm on TV where she is stunned.
So Xavier is in the astral plane and then Lalandra presses the button. The anal stimulator goes off.
I do appreciate that. Weirdly, he ended up obviously seeing Gambit turn to death. But my favorite is the line of, they were dancing, drinking wine, and making love.
Grant Morrison's lines.
Yep.
That is exactly from New X-Men number 116.
Thank you for explaining that to the listeners, because I knew that already.
Do any of you guys just like the sound of that Sentinel laser? I think it's just a great sound.
Oh, yeah.
In the same way of like...
Can you do it?
No.
What's it sound like?
But like also like Tony Stark's like charge up.
Oh, the repulsor ray?
Yeah. They're just great sounds that make you immediately think of that.
Yeah.
That sounds like a cat.
I gotta pet that laser.
Let me pet that cat gun.
So Gambit's the featured one. We see a lot of deaths and skeletons, but Gambit is obviously the featured one.
I'm assuming
hits a little bit harder, obviously. Like his death feels...
His children are dying.
Well, yeah, and also his death feels like the most permanent one.
Confirmed.
Because, his boyfriend, quote unquote, died, but like he didn't even care.
Fagnus.
Yeah.
I did think it was interesting them revealing this simultaneously for both of these characters, because it explained why life death wasn't one episode on its own.
Yeah.
It was because you had to have Storm away from Genosha.
Yeah, very true.
And
take her off the chessboard.
Yeah. Basically,
this storytelling way was really done well. Like, and it was done differently than we had it with like the Jubilee Part 1 version of this too. So I really enjoyed how they're kind of breaking up. And each episode can be really like cut very differently to like tell a full story, which I really enjoyed it.
It definitely feels more layered in a different way than the original series ever got.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we even get a semi, not really post credits.
Oh, I got a semi.
I got a fully.
So we see Bolivar Trask on the run. He just, I don't know, he fucking got out of
where someone
was
shot
going.
Him in the back with a laser. Who shot him?
Liberty,
you know, Valance?
They were using his DNA to access Master Mold. He's begging for death. And then we hear a very sinister line of, don't fret the future. Genosha was merely the beginning of a prologue, now past. You have nothing to fear as you place your faith in Sinister.
So we got Sinister here. Last week, when Cable came far too late, his timing sucks. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about he's here or he's coming. So did we think that it, like, he's referring to Apocalypse, because Sinister in the cartoon
usually
has been Apocalypse's.
Yeah.
We talked about it briefly. It's got to be one of the two, right?
Yeah.
Like, so maybe leading to either Nimrod or Bastion or something like that.
Yeah. And we don't think it's Cassandra Nova. They're not going to bring her
That feels so far off. But
it's definitely not pulling that from New X-Men, I don't think, from Morrison's run.
It almost feels, I think I was saying last week, it almost feels as though it's like an Apocalypse. He did this as a survival of the fittest test. Maybe some level of, not obviously the Krakoa Apocalypse, but like something of just coming back to a little bit to his roots. Because he did get a little all over the place by the end of the original series. But I'm also still interested as to why Sinister is helping.
I'd assumed for some reason that they wouldn't use Cassandra Nova because of Deadpool and Wolverine.
Oh, yeah, that's a fair point, because she's going to be in that, yeah.
Well, we will find out more next week, but I just need episode 8 to start, because everyone's talking such hot shit about that.
I know. They're really hyping it up.
I know.
Yeah. So we still have episode 7.
I know.
You get a whole extra episode.
Yes!
That's what happens when 6
this is so good.
Doesn't
seven,
eat 7
8
But isn't it sad that 7 is going back to the Morlocks, and then they're going to be like, what were you doing before Genosha? Yeah.
And then they're going to go to every single individual human.
Go to Iceman, Polaris,
Tommy,
Tilby. We're going to her house and to watch
Trish. I just want to see more Nightcrawler in next episode.
I would love that.
I have a feeling that's going to happen.
I would love that. All right, let's move on. Mutant Madness last year was She's Got the Look. This year it's X-Menswear, but it just ended, y'all.
X-Men Endswear.
X-Men's underwear.
Yep.
All right, so it's finally over after 7,000 or 8,000 years / weeks. And the winner, you guys ready for it? Can I get a drum roll, please? Can I get a drum roll? Can I get a drum roll? Can I get a drum roll?
Bing.
It is Krakoa Cyclops.
Fuck this shit.
Boo.
Hey, come on. What are you guys doing?
I like that.
What are you booing for?
I just didn't want Cyclops to be the ultimate winner of the four.
Because he's too hot?
Yeah.
Who did you want? who did you want if you didn't want Cyclops?
Anyone else.
Any single one of them.
I am surprised. No, I'm glad that Wolverine didn't win. I like Cyclops. So I'm glad he won. It's just, that's like, of all of the Cyclops costumes, I'm just surprised that pulled so far.
Which one did you want to win of Cyclops' outfits?
The Revolution. Just love that.
Oh, the
black
X over.
And red look. It's so good.
This is the closest you're going to get to that winning.
It looks very similar, but blue.
And it doesn't have the X over.
I refuse to assimilate. I don't want to be part of this culture.
I also wanted Revolution, and I'm fine with this. This costume is just the, you know, Super Smash Bros. Control C to left.
It's the same thing, different color.
But it doesn't have that cool
palette
X
swap.
Yeah.
Where do you all come down for Cyclops on head condom or letting the hair fly? Because he's got great looks for both.
I know. At the end of the day, I think I'm condom on.
For sure.
Condom on.
Oh, because it's iconic.
You like a bareback. You like safe sex. All right.
Him to be free, you know, when he's out of his costume.
Oh, like when he puts it on. It's like
you're on the job now. You're on the clock.
This was not my favorite Cyclops look, but one that I liked a lot. I was really worried that the 90s Jim Lee designed one that was in the animated series and in currently X-Men 97
panties
was going to
on
win
the front.
For too many pockets and too many belts.
Yeah.
It was a good look. Asymmetric Y, it's a good look.
It's a good look, but I was worried that nostalgia would take us through, and it didn't. It was, you know, a more recent look, which I think is very well designed. So
I'm just glad Archangel didn't win.
I was surprised Archangel beat Wolverine.
That guy should be like a traffic cone or something.
Everybody's always shitting on Angel.
Yeah. I like his look. I think he has got the
that
look.
To me is more like he's iconic. Got the look.
I like it a lot too, but I'm glad Cyclops won.
Thank you all for voting. I may disagree with you and hate you now, but you did it.
You made lots of choices that I vehemently disagree with.
Not rigged. I hate this outfit.
Yeah. And I think we learned that Bishop actually has some good looks out there, because I think initially we were like, meh, like in terms of his fashions.
I ended up liking his stuff the most.
There's blue with a red bandana, mm-hmm. black with a red bandana,
red with a red bandana. Yeah.
Yeah. Looks.
Yes.
Bishop is just a stylish motherfucker, I think. I mean, he just looks good.
He's got drip. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't close. Think you're saying that right. Yeah.
You've never sounded older. No, you know that, right?
No cap.
He's got drip to give him riz. No cap.
Yeah. Well,
that was a long run and an enjoyable one. What are your favorite moments from this run?
From Mutant Madness?
Yeah, from
Mutant Madness. Being surprised, honestly. And also when there were like splits. So in the Couture 4... We had to be tiebreakers for Wolverine versus Angel, as well as Cyclops versus Bishop. And we were the tiebreaker to have Angel make it to the finals. Again, surprised that Angel made it to the finals. And we had to be the tiebreaker for Cyclops to get in the finals, which I expected a little bit more. Just like when we did last year for She's Got the Look, I really thought nostalgia was going to like push things forward. It was going to be the Jim Lee Storm look. It was going to be the Jim Lee Rogue look. And it really wasn't. It wasn't that at all. I think, you know, the voter surprised me.
Yeah. I think I was surprised by the fact that people don't like Wolverine's looks. They do not like they do not like him. But maybe it's just our fans. Our fans are anti-Logan, pro-Laura.
Yeah, that's true. I think the queer fan base is a little less of the, like, traditional sort of 90s sort of pockets look.
Yeah.
And a little bit more
next year rock and roll. We'll do like we'll do one for the straights, and it'll be like, oh, who's better, the Punisher or Thor? And we'll just do those two.
I love that. Why don't you do that one by yourself?
You think Thor is for the straights?
I think so. I think straight people.
No, it would definitely be. I feel like it's probably Iron. It's Punisher is certainly one of the contestants. Maybe Iron Man.
Yeah. What's the most?
Maybe Deadpool.
What is the most toxic
Venom?
Can we do like
Venom?
Can we do just Punisher?
Just
oops,
Punisher.
Oops, all Punisher. Oops, all Punisher.
It's just, how does the skull look slightly different in this outfit? Yeah, this outfit. Yeah. Ugh. Awful. All right, well, as just Adam said, thank you all for voting over the last almost 2 months. Really appreciate it, and appreciated the comments that you guys had, too. Some people got really passionate about those looks.
Yeah, I like all the messages that were like, if this one doesn't win, I'm going to freak out and kill myself. And we just want to say thank you for all your passion.
We were involved in one federal bomb investigation.
Please take that passion into November when there's a real election happening. Exactly. Another Mutant Madness, actually. Yeah.
Perfect. And don't vote for Archangel.
Archangel. The most evil math ever.
Archangel. It's me, Archangel.
I'm the angle of death.
All right, let's move on to the issues, which is our weekly recap of all things X, as well as things in the Ultimate Universe. This week we've got The Fall of the House of X number 4, Dead X-Men number 4, X-Men Unlimited Infinity number 135. That is a mouthful. And Ultimate Black Panther number 3.
Starting Don't act like you can't handle it.
Let's start with Fall of the House of X
Come
number
on,
4.
Kaylin, take a breather. You just went through a whole Mutant Madness. You're all riled up. You're too excited.
I got to get it all in my mouth.
You drank your juice really quickly.
All right. So the writer
is... Oh, no. This has sugar in it. No.
He had two apple juices. What?
I'm all wired up. All right. Speaking of wired up, Fall of the House of X number 4. The writer is Jerry Duggan. The artists are Lucas Wernick and Jethro Morales. It's the penultimate issue. And if you're confused about what's happening, don't worry. So are we. Xavier attempted to kill Moira in her 10th life over in the Rise of Powers of 10, but here he's making a deal with Orcus. Why? No idea. Meanwhile, Apocalypse attempts to rejuvenate Krakoa by replicating the Crucible. Apparently, blood sacrifices will make the mutant homeland healthy again. Was this seeded before this issue? Nope. Oh, and while we love Storm to pieces, she's apparently the deus ex machina for the final issue, if you can believe the final page of this issue. So let me ask y'all, whoever wants to jump in, what do we think Charles Xavier is up to with the plot that like got dropped in this issue?
I honestly have no fucking idea. I came on this podcast to hopefully learn from you all. I was so confused.
Sir, this is a Wendy's.
I was so confused by the end of this.
I had to read the conversation between Xavier and Nimrod so many times, and I don't understand the last five sentences that were exchanged. They were talking about something about my guys, but your guys, okay, trusted, agreed.
So, yeah, and he was like, so you want to make a deal? Okay, I'll make a deal with you. We'll do, okay, well, what if it would be in that deal? And you're like, okay, let's get to it. And then they say it in one sentence, as you say, Brent, and I'm like, what the fuck just went down? So it feels like he's going to sell out his X-Men to help.
So he can't control his X-Men.
So he might murder his X-Men.
But he can
protect
all of the Orcus staff from being mind fucked with by Emma.
And they will leave Earth, or they'll be in this weird sort of untouchable area from them. What?
Well, that's what it was like.
Who now?
There was definitely a thing of what? Like, yeah, we'll have like
Kaylin, you asked the question. What the fuck's going on?
Okay, so I'm trying to I'm like.
Thank you for putting us on the spot when you didn't know. Okay.
Well, I'm asked. I really want to know.
He's using the Socratic method.
Yeah.
It's a teaching tool to learn what you're supposed to know.
Yeah. Like every good, like Charles Xavier when he was teaching people episode of X-Men.
He's like, who here knows what the Ashiar Empire is?
Don't raise all your hands at once. I'm starting to try to piece it together, like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia style, with like, you know, the string and everything. Because reading, like, you know, you had Dead X-Men, which we'll talk about in a couple minutes. We had Rise of the Powers of 10, which was a few weeks ago, number three, where Rachel convinces him not to kill Moira at the beginning of her 10th life, or like right before she gets her mutant powers. He says something about like, oh, I have, now it's time for Plan B, essentially. Which is not about abortion. It's not an abortion pill. It is making a deal with Orcus, apparently.
And that shooting Rachel still at the end of the Rise of the Powers.
We haven't figured out what that's about yet. So it is, a lot of the stuff is, the sequencing has been really off on all these issues, which is making it tough. But I'm hoping when I do my reread, that reading it
so
in like a sequential order.
Well, he's definitely.
What do you think his plan is?
I think he's going to do a double cross of Orcus.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
Through
that text exchange.
He'll show up at the Orcus station, but actually it's a straw man dressed as Charles Xavier that he throws out of a spaceship.
Didn't he kill a bunch of like human are they
Orcus
American
agents?
Oh, they are. No, I thought it was. I didn't think the Agnew. Like, I thought that was like an actual like
Spiro Agnew.
I thought that was a military ship, not a.
Yeah,
them. Yeah, so I was like, how
so
do you
a bunch
come
of
back
humans,
from that?
He was like, he just blew up.
So he's making a deal with them to save mutants as a whole. You can murder humans, which I am for. Kill them all, me included. But
wait, so we as gay people can just team up with robots to kill all the streets?
Yeah, that's what I.
What do you think I'm doing with ChatGPT? Yeah,
and then but he's gonna also betray his X-Men. So maybe he just has to murder all his X-Men too. So maybe Rachel is the first one in the thing of like betraying all of them.
It might be. Again, it is. It is like, even though Jonathan Hickman hasn't been writing the X-Men for a couple of years, it is, you know, beware like highly intelligent, mostly white men, because they think they're doing stuff for the greater good, but they're actually creating more problems down the road.
All right. Here's a guess.
Okay. Yeah, go for it.
Charles Xavier genuinely betrays the X-Men, gets them all killed by helping the AI. But the fuse that he lit with killing Rachel to get a more powerful Phoenix resurrected continues to burn. The Phoenix is resurrected and is able to bring back all of the X-Men, and they are able to overthrow
through the white hot room.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
That's probably, it's like, it's certainly, it's got to end up in a positive flip, because even the conversation between Scott and Xavier just felt like It almost feels like it's lacking emotional resonance because we don't know what the plan is. And it feels almost like too smart by half, where I'm like, one thing I think, like you were describing with all the issues going in and out of order, I would have really loved if, and I've already said it's enough for other crossover type things. I just wish this followed the Ten of Swords format, where it was just a 20 chapter series.
Part one. Yeah, I agree.
And they just fit
or
in.
Or the first Hellfire Gala.
Exactly. Whatever the issues were, it kind of connected and told that story. It's really hard, especially with these three series, threading the needle on, okay, so that's happening over there, that's happening. Dead X-Men, Rise and Fall, you're like, okay.
And then you have X-Men, the Jerry's also
still
writing.
Still happening.
Which is also still happening.
I did love the moment, like, so you're telling me we transported a Sentinel City to defeat them head on? And you're like, okay, who's buying this?
Okay, so I normally love the art. I think Lucas Warnock is a good artist, and Jethro Morales, I've liked his stuff before, but you had a panel of the Sword Station, which literally impaled Sentinel City.
Yeah,
it's hard to tell. It had a literal impact. Did it have an emotional impact for you? Did you feel anything?
But I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah. You are correct. It was sometimes hard to read. It didn't read that well sometimes.
They should call this the fall asleep of the House of X.
It's pretty good. Especially when those epic moments, like you mentioned Ten of Swords, you had Pepe Larraz with, like, you know, I know you don't love
my
X-Men, you know, like kind of like splash pages, but that felt so epic and earned. Like, I was like, fuck yeah, this is a great moment. Mm. This was not a great moment. Another thing happened also, so did Wrong Slide's sacrifice when he's doing the kind of the quasi-crucible thing, did that mean anything to you? Because we haven't seen him in so long.
I've loved Wrong Slide for forever, so that was impactful to me, but I think the general reader, and also even just the reader of this entire run, the Hawks and Pox run, or Krakoa and Age as a whole, it's probably not going to hit that hard because he was sort of a third, fourth tier character.
It was barely in the series for a long time.
I mean, someone had a poor guy that went first, though. He was like, I'm almost dead. Kill me first. I like
very
him.
Rick and Morty.
Yeah. I love to die. And you're like, okay, great.
So the weird thing about this crucible is there was...
You used air quotes when you said that.
There was a part of it, a part of, like, mutant lives have to be lost to feed Krakoa that they discussed, which was basically Krakoa is feeding off of their psychic energy.
Yeah, right.
And unchecked, Krakoa would just suck them all dry. But because there were enough mutants...
Yeah, he's fine.
The one time I did not intend to make a sexual joke.
Oh, bitch. That was not intended? No, wow, you nailed it then.
So, hi, my name's Krakoa and I'm here to suck you all dry. So Krakoa, I did think that there was some part previously where they talked about that it's just because there's so many people that Krakoa can
feed on your feet.
But the thing that wasn't quite as clear was, so if I kill someone immediately, you get the whole thing. Like, you get one whole person.
Again.
Through a lot of blood, too.
Yeah, yeah, thank you for reminding me about, like, that's how Krakoa needed to, like, sustain him. It's themselves. And I forgot all about that. So, like, that whole, like, quasi-crucible thing, I was like, What? He needs a blood sacrifice?
Oh.
I did not remember that at all.
Especially with the traditions, you're like, meh.
Well, so, including the having this crucible type thing was a weird way of including that for sure, because that was wholly separate from Krakoa getting any benefit.
Yeah.
I enjoyed how he was like, okay, Wrong Slide, you're going to fucking kill yourself, blah, 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 we're going to fight, blah, blah, blah. But Wrong Slide and Wrong Slide together, both of them, Santo, as we call him, doesn't die in the way that normal mutants do, so he just had to sort of crush him and then sort of just drizzle the pebbles in his mouth, and he was like,
fruity pebbles.
Yes,
as much
like
as
little marbles. Like, hungry
he wasn't drinking his blood; he was sort of like having pop rocks instead. Yeah,
it's like grape nuts on your ice cream.
As much as I don't think the maybe character arc really meant that much. I did think the writing was pretty strong, just in that sense of like him, like, it was nice to live. And yes. I thought it was really interesting and well done. And I'm almost just sad that Ronk's like got so lost in the mix.
Santo Vaccaro, I'll miss you.
But I think that was also a cool way to close out the loop on this, is that like he'll probably come back in some fucking format.
Yeah, there's
my pet rock.
NYX. NYX. Yeah. He's like the road or something.
Oh, yeah. They
like, that'd be fun.
They have one scene where they're like, oh, this is my pet rock, Santo.
What if he's the sidewalk in NYX? Wouldn't that be so fun?
Move over, Danny. Oh,
he's like a little garden at like Central Park, with rocks. Yeah.
Emotionally.
He's not the earth, Kaylin. He's rocks.
No, but a rock garden.
He's rocks, Kaylin.
Okay. Are you getting your rocks off right now?
Isn't a fragment part of the whole? So I like that emotionally a little bit, because I'm someone who's always going to be a sucker for, hey, I can't go on in this life. I'm passing the torch to someone else. I do like how in Wrongside's mind, there's still the view of resurrection.
Yeah.
Even if it's not true.
Yeah. That was a nice... To your point, Adam, I was like, when you see Rockslide again, tell him it was really nice being him. I think that was a good line. So let me ask y'all, last question. Is there anything that can happen in the final issue to redeem the last four issues?
Yeah. I don't think they need redeeming, Kaylin.
Wow.
His pointed ass interview style method.
So what did this mean? Because I think...
Your Honor, objection. Leading the witness.
I do think... Sustained. This is probably the weakest of the specific Fall of X books that aren't just the main series type stuff. And it's speeding to crashing to a finish. So I think if the plot makes sense of what Xavier's double cross is, then great.
It's hard to tell, especially once we start talking about dead X-Men. But I have a feeling that when we read all this together, it's a little bit of a bumpy descent right now, but collected, maybe it will feel
it'll work better.
Another thing I'll just say too is, I think this happens for me in general with media, whether they stay quality or not. The minute I know a show or a book or something is reaching its act, it is really hard for me to stay as passionate and connected and excited. And so I think that's also my own bias showing up,
because
I think a lot of the stuff probably, while I think it's moving fast, is probably moving at somewhat normal pacing. And my brain is just like, well, it's almost over. It's got to be perfect, or it's got to be this. Yeah. And I think that's diluting some of my
emotional
reading
beats
intensity.
Are very hard to do when you know it's going to come to the end. You're like, well, I'm ready for these tears.
Yes.
But when you don't see them coming, like Gambit dying and all that,
issue,
you didn't expect it coming. Yeah. So you bawled. Even Wrongside, seeing more emotional connections in the books would really help this as an ending.
Yeah.
Because it's
more character beats than just story
and
beats.
Reflecting. I mean, the Wrongside reflection stuff. Chef's kiss.
That was good. All right, so moving on to Dead X-Men number 4. Writers is Steve Fox. The artists are Bernard Chang, David Baldion, and Vincent Caratu. It is the final issue of the companion series to The Rise of Powers of 10. The Dead X-Men take on Robo Moira, while Orbis Scalaris attempts to ascend to Dominion, only to discover something we've known all along. Someone already beat him to the punch. The series ends with a moment we've already seen in Rise of Powers of 10 number 3. Charles about to kill Moira in her 10th life before her powers kick in. So we see Rachel leveraging the dead X-Men into convincing Charles not to kill Moira. Do we know, and this is kind of related to what we were talking about before, because he didn't kill Moira, this is now his backup plan. Did we see this anywhere in Dead X-Men or in Rise of Powers of 10 anywhere?
No, as far as I know. And I also didn't, I'm also still confused on if they're, So I guess if I really think about, is this all making sense? If he was to listen to their plan, isn't their plan the thing you were saying, Brent, of using Phoenix and the White Hot Room to change the world or do something? So it almost feels like this was, there's machinations, but all of it's leading towards that. I assume he accepted the fact that the plan proposed by the Dead X-Men made sense, and now they're just executing it, but in a very vague, vague booking way.
It could be vague booking, but I mean, if they're the way that they're leading up to it, it's all about idealism and the ends don't justify the means.
It's insanity,
which is why they convince through Rachel, they convince him not to kill Moira before her powers kick in. because they need like they need this they need Krakoa to exist. That like I have a hard time believing that like it's their plan to betray humanity to save the mutants.
Yeah, that's very fair. Well, it's like hopefully Xavier took it the wrong way again, like he always does.
Yeah.
He's really bad with people and then situations and decisions.
That's
you know
a professor
I mean?
For you.
He has the people skills of a wasp.
He's really I would just like to say this series I will remember for one reason, and it's to understand how Dazzler's powers work a little bit more. For that reason, I'm going to remember this. So kudos to Steve for putting in some Dazzler nuggets, so I will remember the series forever.
She like took an axe to the neck, basically.
Yeah.
It was to,
but the power of sound. So,
and her powers work like this. She's pretty much immortal, right?
Sure.
Unless her whole body explodes and her backbones just go everywhere. But if she gets like a really bad flesh wound, she can recover from that.
With sound.
With sound. Okay? Hear me out on this.
Never dies. That's the reason why.
I enjoy knowing this stupid fact. So thank you, Steve Fox, for putting this in there because I was really disheartened that like she could die because I thought she was immortal.
Did you think that all of their speeches on why Krakoa needed to exist would summon Captain Krakoa.
But the Nazi Captain Krakoa, the evil Steve Rogers. Yeah.
And I like how Cannonball was like, for me, my child, like, and I wouldn't have met my wife and I wouldn't have had a child. And then Jubilee was like, oh, fuck, I didn't even mention Shogo. I didn't even bring Shogo up. God damn, me too. Like,
he's just a dragon over another world.
Jubilee really forgot about Shogo.
That's why she's the worst.
Wow. I think she's better. I think she's better now.
Throw that baby in the
basket.
She
got better, and her jacket looks the best out of them.
Anything else on Dead X-Men? All right.
No, more to come.
More. Let's move on to X-Men Unlimited Infinity, number 135. The writers are the Steves, Steve Fox and Steve Orlando. The artist is Nick Roche. Even without the swordplay, this issue is full of deep cuts as the Steves explore Sunspot and Gideon's past rivalry from the early days of X-Force. In addition to using mutant powers, Robert DaCosta uses his most potent ability, his money, into hiring Solemn to stopping Gideon and cutting off his hand in order to spare his life. In order to spare his life, Gideon promises to stop his ascension and gives the X-Men the necessary information to stop Selene's ascension. Clearly, we're heading into the climax of the series. I don't really have a question. I just really like the series a lot, and I really like this team. I just want to say that.
I enjoy it. I don't love the X-Corp style type. I did a business and I bought everything you have.
That's how business works.
How does that
work? What are you talking about? That's how business works.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie The Net? It's so easy to do business. You just go type.
You go to geocities.com/Brent, you're wrong.
Yeah. Didn't you ever see 24? Chloe would just go in and she would go, I'm in the business.
Yeah.
I've done, and enhance.
I've gotten all your business.
Yeah. I mean, if Trinary, are you saying like Trinary's not actually friends with all the computers she's talking to?
Was that crazy or was Sebastian the one who took the business?
Sebastian took the business. Yeah. He called Selena dusty old witch or something like that.
He's fun.
He's doing great.
Sebastian's doing great.
Everything is coming up, Sebastian.
He really did come out on top.
He's made three empires of cash.
I mean, seriously.
From the fall of X.
We were like, oh, he's going to find his own and like he's going to get it. And no, he's okay. He did whatever he wanted.
He got Gideon's shit. He got all the resources in Krakoa. And then there was someone else's money he got.
How much do you think it costed rent Solemn for a night or whatever?
He is expensive.
Yeah, I would assume.
He got like eight
what
minutes.
Do you think?
Dozens of dollars.
In Krakoan money, how
oh,
much?
Like in Mysterium? It's a lot of Mysterium.
Really? Well, that's expensive to
yeah.
be.
Probably a nugget.
A nugget of Mysterium? It's like a doubloon.
One nug of Mysterium.
I liked Sunspot's giving him the business, though, and he was like, I probably can't beat you alone, so I'm going to have Solemn do some shit, too.
I also, it was the end of last issue, and he was wearing it in this issue, the mask that he would have in X-Force.
Yeah.
I was like, nice callback. Like,
awesome.
the Steves love their nostalgia, yeah. And like, as somebody who's read those issues, that's fucking great.
That's a great, yeah. The toughest part of this is probably actually like when the first run of X-Men Green was happening, which is like, this should be something that people can purchase on stands. I mean, I know it'll probably get released as a collected.
Yeah,
but it's excellent. It's a really great book, particularly for Fall of X.
It's a lot of fun. All right, moving on to our final issue of the week. It's Ultimate Black Panther number 3. A writer is Brian Hill.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but do you think if they sold this as a book, it would be like on a roll, like a scroll of paper that you're able to like scroll through all
the
issues?
You know what? Why aren't we selling toilet paper?
Like, this week's cylinder of issues?
To that point, Ryan, you probably remember this. The annuals of X-Men in 2001, both Grant Morrison's New X-Men and Joe Casey's Uncanny X-Men, they had the widescreen annuals, remember?
Oh, yeah.
You had to read them, like, sideways.
Oh,
so, like,
geez, like a full-on, like,
Yeah. So, it's, and, like, now in the collected format for, like, New X-Men, I have the hardbacks. Reading that annual, it's like, I gotta fucking flip it over. Yeah. I'm like, this is so annoying. I hate it. I fucking hate it. I'm wondering how they did because the first Unlimited storyline was Jonathan Hickman and Declan Shelby doing that Wolverine series, and that was very, like,
very,
you know,
vertical.
I didn't read it.
That
the
was the
version.
Original pitch for why this was going to work, and then they sort of like, well, we just wrote comics. So.
Yeah.
Well, let's just write some regular comics.
All right, so moving on to our final issue of the week, Ultimate Black Panther number 3, writer Brian Hill, artist is Stefano Casali. Shuri and Okoye spar for several pages while Killmonger takes the titular character to his and Aurora's secret base. There, Eric reveals to T'Challa a glowing green spherical MacGuffin. What is that thing? What is it?
I'll tell you what it's not.
What?
A narrative about who the fuck has betrayed Black Panther. Yes. Give me the spycraft. I want the geopolitics. I want the spycraft. I don't need big green sphere.
No, you got a big green
sphere. What about them sparring for
If you
most
don't finish your big
issue.
Green sphere, you're not getting geopolitics.
That sphere, by the way, is where Nickelodeon gets all their slime from.
Okoye and Shuri fighting felt very Game of Thronesy. I like loved that scene. I thought it was really well done. The writing is strong overall in the book. I did love that they like ran. I literally went back and forth between issue 2 and this because they do that cold open essentially, and they're like, oh, yeah, and Black Panther was found by Killmonger and also Storm. I was like, the end of the last issue shows him running and being saved by Storm, and then all of a sudden he is, like, shooting arrows with Killmonger.
She's down there.
And she shows up later.
But
I was like,
They also will not say Storm. They say the person that happens to have used at some point and may also frequently like Storms. And you're like, Storm?
I don't know who Storm is in the Ultimate Universe because there is a... In the Ultimate X-Men, there is a
Storm. Maystorm. Yeah. Yeah, she's Japanese.
Type of character, yeah.
I do like this book a lot. I love like all the Ultimate stuff, but my problem with this one and with Ultimate X-Men, it's now becoming too decompressed that it's not giving me enough per issue. And these things are $4.99 a pop, y'all. It is not cheap. And so it's just like I'm getting too little. Like, give me more. Like, I think Hickman's doing a really good job with Ultimate Spider-Man. Like, I'm getting a full fucking story, and it's a nice continuing storyline. And then, as we've talked about before, Dennis Kemp, who's going to be doing Ultimate, he announced that every issue will be a one and done.
Yeah.
Like, it'll tell a full story while propelling the narrative forward. And so, it's like, give me a little bit more. It's too little.
I think what's interesting to me, I would agree with that in general. They feel a little bit more like indie title, like on Image Comics or something. Because I remember like I would used to buy like Image Comics, like offshoot kind of things. And it would be like, yeah, you wouldn't really get much. You'd get great artwork. And then I'm not saying like all Image Comics, but I do think that's what's missing is no one's tightening that screw on some of the storytelling. Because I thought, again, the cold open stuff with Shuri and Okoye was excellent. I would have loved... Something seemed off with the Storm Killmonger Panther storytelling, essentially. Like, almost stuff got, like, chopped out to kind of get them to the green orb by the end.
Also, if that's going to be, like, the splash page, the final reveal, tell us what the... Either tell us what the green orb is or give us something like, oh, fuck. Not like a...
A green orb.
Like, what? I was like...
Have a person tied up. Have a thing that's
something,
like,
especially with Eric saying, like, you know, when T'Challa goes, you know, by Bast or whatever... It's like, your God isn't here. You're like, that's a great line, but like, give me like the punchline after that line, you know?
Yeah.
Or we don't know what it is.
We don't know what it is.
Is it Zordon? Like, what is that thing?
Zordon? I love Zordon. All right.
As always, we like to wrap up with a little something we call Plug Me Daddy, where each of us get a chance to quickly highlight something we've read, seen, heard, and wanted to experience with you guys, our little baby homos. What plugs would you like to plug this week? Caelan, why don't we start with you?
Sure. So Ryan, Adam, and I all got to see friend of pod and amazing comedian Jay Jordan just a few days ago. And he was at the DC Improv, which is a great comedy club in downtown DC. He's a funny guy. He's been on our podcast before as a Career Crush. He's been at our X Games panel at FlameCon. I was not prepared how good his stand-up was going to be. It was... That man is so fucking talented. He is going to, like, go places. All of his punchlines just fucking hit. The entire crowd was losing their mind. And he knew his crowd. It's like, it's a queer crowd. There's a lot of people of color. It's D.C., so a lot of folks, you know, work in, like, government and politics. Like, he fucking knew it. It was great.
It was a freight train. Yeah. So fun. His openers were phenomenal too. Like it was a great fucking.
I think he's still doing some tour dates. So find him on what is it, JJ something? What's his like handle?
Jay
Jordan. I thought it was like JJ Club or something.
Joe Shabadoo.
Yeah.
Buy tickets for his tour, but he also has a great presence online. So definitely follow him. I will speak. I guess it's a double.
You will speak.
I will speak now. It's a double plug.
Silence.
Because Brent did this last week, but I just wrapped up watching Fallout. I do wish, and there's an annoying battle going on anywhere on the internet of whether shows should be releasing weekly or dumping, binging. And I do think...
How many casualties have we had in this war?
I do think for Fallout missed a pretty good opportunity have a weekly... Yep. Occurrence, and I don't think people would have been angry that they couldn't get it all at once.
So there's like good cliffhangery type.
Yeah.
Sure. So how many episodes end with like just a giant green orb? Is that none of them? Or?
They may actually at every episode ends big green orb.
But yeah, no, we really highly recommend if you like post-apocalyptic dystopia stuff. But it's got a lot, so many. It feels a lot like because it's. I think it's executive produced by was it Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, who also did Westworld, and so it just has a lot of similar vibes. But thankfully, this does not look
the
like
mystery
it's gonna jump
is
the
good enough, and the characters are interesting enough that the weekly speculation would have been a lot.
Yes,
fun.
Agreed.
I actually like when they release stuff weekly because like, could you imagine X-Men 97 as a binge?
No.
It would not like it would have the
our heads would have been
by literally 8 a.m. of Wednesday morning. Someone would have been posting about episode 5.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I will also do a replug.
Okay.
Which I did
not
at
what
the
this segment is. But okay, continue.
Speaking to
do
the
whatever you want, I guess.
Hey, speaking to the microphone, asshole. It's Delicious in Dungeon. So when I had plugged it, like two episodes were out. It is on episode 15. 16 has just come out. There are going to be 24 episodes, so you still have time to catch
up.
It starts out as this campy, silly show about killing monsters and cooking them into food and builds a super complicated, super fucked up Dungeons and Dragons type world. It is excellent. Excellent, excellent. I walk around the house doing Sinji's voice all the time. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, wow.
Watch Delicious in Dungeons on Netflix.
Only available on Netflix.
What are you going to read, double plug?
I'm going to single plug.
Jay Jordan.
I would recommend there's a documentary that came out on FX. It's now available on Hulu called Sperm World. And Sperm World is a documentary, and it's basically this.
Who wrote my biography?
Your butt. You're talking out of your ass again. Basically, it's this. It's you know, like the process of getting a sperm donor.
We all know it.
Yeah, you go on Grindr.
That's why you relate today.
You say pump and dump, taking all loads. This is my address.
Breeding, darling. Breeding.
Door unlocked, blindfold on.
It's a man who donates his sperm because he's like an official like sperm donor.
Tops,
and
gone.
Okay, well, it's got a lot of heart.
Guys.
This documentary has a lot of heart, but, and it's like how that interaction is never, you never see them actually interact with the person that you're giving sperm. So it's very fascinating. Very strange, but it's kind of heartfelt.
Like, why people do it. And
well, and also it follows specific individuals, and they even on camera are like, is it okay to film you? This is a very personal situation. But it's really fascinating. It's like
Where can you watch it again?
Only available on Hulu.
Hulu.
Or FX, if you got it, bitch.
I do now. God.
All right. Well, that's been our episode. Check out Sperm Wars.
Sperm
Wars. The Creashier Sperm Wars. No, it starts with world, then wars, then
Messiah. Sperm Messiah.
Sperm. Then there's Sperm Endgame.
Sperm Messiah.
That's been our episode. Rate and review us if you can. Thanks for participating in Mutant Madness and helping us pick Krakoa Cyclops as your winner. We'll be back again next week with our review of Episode 7 of X-Men 97. You can find us on Twitter at HomoSpearX, Instagram at HomoSpearPodcast, and Reddit at HomoSpearPodcast. Give us some karma. Give us some love. Reach into our DMs. Send us your favorite sperm war.
Let us suck you dry.
Donate your sperm to us.
Suck you dry.
Bye.
Bye.